We're talking about the success of failure this afternoon. So joining me on the line is Mr. George Mordaunt. And George, you're very welcome to the show. Just as a little bit of an introduction, George has written two books, which I'll talk about in a moment. But he has experienced significant, I suppose, setbacks within his own business and has gone on to thrive as a result of that. He's authored two books, and he's now generally regarded as the new generation media contributor. His delivery is often very direct, painfully honest, and very independent. So we're looking forward to listening to him. George doesn't believe in holding back or answering questions by relying on politically correct position. And George is, of course, in business in Clonmel. He is running the Mordaunt Motor Group. So you're very welcome, George.
Thanks, Monica. How are you?
Very well, very well. Thank you. So, George, we spoke earlier, I suppose, last week about the theme of the show being the success of failure, and how sometimes it's not always celebrated is maybe too strong of a word, but the advantage of failure is not often spoken about in business circles. So I'm delighted to have you on the show to maybe tell us a little bit about your experience of failure and how you returned from there and how you rallied back again into the success of the business that you have now.
Yeah, well, I suppose when people get into business, failure is the last thing on their mind. And for my situation, like many thousands of people across the country, failure was, I can't say forced upon us, because you always have to look at failure and look at your own culpability in it. But I suppose it's fair to say that, you know, 2008 and onwards was an exceptional time, and we'll go down in history as an exceptional time in this country. So certainly a great proportion of the failure that people suffered was beyond their control. And in my situation, as has been well documented, I certainly have reflected and looked back at things that I could have done differently and things that I could have handled differently. But failure was upon me, there was a long, hard battle fought to navigate that failure. And I suppose I'll jump forward in order to jump back, Monica. I'm now 11 years down the road, and in many respects, and this is a crazy statement, I'm thankful for that failure, because it has brought me to a place in my life and in my business and in my career where I've reached a point of satisfaction. And I think when you get into business, people get into it to make money, and obviously that's very important, but there's also the satisfaction of achieving your goals and being successful. And I'm not sure, when I look back at my former career, which was traditional car sales, i.e., you know, franchise car sales, brand mm-hmm. car sales, servicing parts, all of that stuff, I'm not sure whether the satisfaction would have ever come home for me, in the context that I grew up in a family business, and, you know, I didn't create something or start something. And the failure that I've experienced has led me to a point where I slightly reinvented the wheel in my world of the motor industry, and we're now doing something that isn't done anywhere else in the country. And so the satisfaction in that is huge. And, you know, we've returned to profitability, and the combination of both is huge. So without failure, I probably wouldn't have arrived here. But what I would say to you is, failure is an unusual thing. It's one of those things that when it is set upon you in your darkest hour, there are two ways of going. One is to fail and break down, and the other is to rebel and push back. And the latter may not always be successful, but in my case, it was. And, you know, mm-hmm. One of the things that I started doing over the last couple of years is I don't read books. I'm not a good reader. But, you know, I came late to audiobooks, and I started listening to different books from different people, both in business and in political life, but specifically in business. And the one thing that rang home the whole time is that some of the most successful people in Ireland, in Europe, in the world, have all failed on numerous occasions. And it's certainly a lesson on the road to arriving at a point where you can be successful. Success will not... rarely will show its face without some form of failure along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just mentioned that at the top of the show, that, you know, if we look at Steve Jobs, J.K. Rowling, Bill Gates, Michael Jordan, even Vincent Van Gogh is there, you know, there's been significant failure on the route to success. And just take me back to the writing and the publication, I suppose, of your first book in 2011. I think that was Shepherd's Pie. What is the essence of that, George?
Well, you got to go back to 2008. It was a time in 2008 in September, October, where, you know, Ireland was on the brink of being bankrupt, where banks were closing right around the world, where many, many business people, specifically men, were committing suicide. There was huge spikes in suicide, where people were starting to lose their homes, where businesses were folding, where our government were on the brink and where the euro was about to collapse. I mean, and you know, the thing about it is we move on and some people forget very easily, but it was a very, very dark time in Ireland. And, you know, we had banks literally clinging on. Now we know what we know with Anglo-Irish Bank and AIB and all of that kind of stuff. So for me, you know, I reached a point in 2009 where it was very, very dismal. And I was really fighting very hard on my back. I had a very young family at the time. And, you know, I was leaving lots of friends and staff go from the business. And, you know, and again, to a backdrop of a great time in Ireland. And, of course, the story, which is very well documented about Shepherd's Pie, is that I came home one evening on a very cold evening. And I had lost a lot of weight from the stress and the strain of everything. And I was very cold. And when I arrived in, my son was eating a piping hot bowl of shepherd's pie, and he was watching some cartoons at the time. And it was just a moment where he looked at me as if to say, "Hey, Dad." And you know, there were no worries in his life. He was secure. And I felt an enormous sense of responsibility to provide the next bowl of shepherd's pie, to you know, to get out on the street and roll up my sleeves and do whatever was required in order to survive, that, you know, this child and my other child and my family were depending on me. And it was really a moment of, you know, as somebody said to me, Monica, in an interview, and I'll put it this way to you, somebody said to me in an interview back in 2011 when speaking about sexual abuse in Ireland, which was obviously a key in the media at the time as well, you know, what makes a person that has suffered at the hands of an abuser become an abuser or become a champion for the abused? It's just that pin on the top, it's that point on the top of a pin that makes you turn. And, you know, that stuck with me when that question was asked. And when I reflected back, it was that moment with Shepherd's Pie where I said, if I'm going to fail, if I'm going down here, I'm going down my way. I'm going down fighting. I'm going to do what I need to do. I'm going to push the boundaries. And I'm going to put myself in a position that if everything crashes and burns, that I can look back and say, I tried everything. And
So you mentioned that you took yourself off to a kind of a retreat and you thought everything through. Is that when you came up with the sort of idea for your remodeled business, the looking at the WeSourceAnyCar.com? You know, where did that come from?
Well, actually, it's moved on significantly from there, because really where it came from is that, you know, we identified that you're right. I used to disappear for a day or two at a time and clear my head and see, where am I going and what am I doing? But I, you know, one thing that I could see in the marketplace is that there was nobody buying new cars. Therefore, in a couple of years' time, there was going to be no used cars for sale. Mm-hmm. Sterling was very weak. Imports were starting to get some momentum, and we couldn't afford to put cars on the forecourt, so we advertised that we will source whatever car that you want, so you come and tell me the car that you want and the budget that you have, and I will find it, and if I find it and I can agree a price with you, I will bring it in from the UK, prepare it, and you can come and collect it. And it saves very busy people who have very busy lives, you know, the time of having to go around the country shopping, looking for different cars. Now, that seems like a very simplistic approach, but in real terms, you know, if mum and dad are in Galway and they've got three kids and there's a particular type of Ford Focus that they want and they can't find it only in Dublin or in Wexford, they don't have the time to drive around. So I became almost a car butler. But actually, from there, the real success came from the ultimate failure, because while that was a bedrock for us for 10 years, we started to do business. But then we ended up in a situation where we had cars sitting on a forecourt and nobody could afford to buy those cars because they couldn't get car finance. And one day we were looking, and this is really, you know, how you can reinvent the wheel. I was looking at maybe 10 cars that we could have sold in any one week, and the customers were applying for traditional car finance. They were being rejected because the banks were shut down. And I just thought to myself, well, you know what? If I sold them the car and they paid me every month, you know, and I vetted the customer and I trusted the customer and we met face to face, I'm prepared to put those 10 cars out at €350 per month, which when you add it up is probably going to be the guts of €40,000 a year. But if you did it for 20 cars, it's going to be €80,000 a year, and so on and so forth. And we started a company called Pay As You Go Auto, and it has been hugely successful for us, to the point where over the last 5 years, we have customers the length and breadth of Ireland who are bypassing credit unions and banks and are buying directly from us. There isn't any interest charges, and they're paying us every 2 weeks until they end up owning the car. And so when you go back to your original question, you know, did I think 10 years ago that I would be selling cars to customers across the country and I would be acting as the bank, even though we do everything to make sure that we don't sound like and look like a bank, but that we would be providing a service where people can upgrade their cars and not get caught in a scenario where they're rejected because a computer in a bank says you've got arrears on your mortgage from 7 years ago, even though you've got the capability of paying, you know, we're not going to do business with you. And it grew and it grew, and word of mouth spread. And eventually we moved our entire staff and our entire focus into Pay As You Go Auto, and it's been tremendously successful. But if you look at it, it is taking my experience and my history of car sales. All of the cars are coming from the UK, which is what we were doing when we were sourcing. And we identified that people in Ireland who are in good jobs with good families can't get their hands on a traditional car loan. And we merged all those three things together, and bang, all of a sudden, we've got a very functional company which is operating into its sixth year, and the demand is enormous, and it seems
excellent.
To be working very well for people.
That's a fantastic story. And to go back for a moment to the kind of those darker days, what was the worst part about it for you, and George? I'm conscious that, you know, you had a young family. Did you ever think, did it ever get so bad that you kind of thought about just giving up, closing the business and doing something else?
Well, I think, you know, we had many businesses and they were closing naturally themselves because of what was happening. So I didn't get to choose whether I got to close or not. I was forced into that situation. I suppose really the worst fear is when you run out of money, when you run out of cash, when you're faced with the possibility of ultimately maybe losing your home. And so many people in this country have gone through that process. When you've got so many staff who are local people, married with kids, who've been with you for two decades, you know, it's a really trying time. And when you live in that community, and you know, if I work with you, Monica, for 10 years, or you work for me for 10 years, and you live 2 miles down the road, and our kids go to the same school, and I've got to let you go, and I'm meeting you in the school 3 weeks later, and you're unemployed, it's a terrible burden that many people had to go through. So there was that, and there was the fear of where the country was going at the time, because, you know, I remember a bank manager ringing me one afternoon because there had been a third high-profile business person suicide in Clonmel within a four-week period, and he just wanted to check and, you know, had you heard the news, are you okay? And I always tell my kids the story that that's how bad it was in Ireland when you had certain people working in banks, some of the better people working in banks, lifting the phone just to make sure. When Shepherd's Pie came out first, the book, in 2011, Allied Irish Bank ordered a van full of them, quite literally a van full of them, to be distributed across the country in Christmas of 2011 for senior staff so that they could read it and see what it was like from the person sitting on the other side of the desk. So, you know, I got a lot of high-profile media coverage at the time. The book just happened to be the right time with the right message, and in some way it was cathartic, and it played a part in both my recovery and in the confidence to get going again, and eventually drove business, would you believe?
Well, I'm sure it did, because it's a critical message, and it's kind of catapulted you into that position where you can now speak on the topic and have experienced it. I suppose a lot of people, while they would have experienced failure, wouldn't necessarily talk about it, and that's maybe what makes you different, is that you're willing to put it down on paper, publish it, put it out there into the world and maybe try and help other people. Whereas, you know, sometimes I think in Ireland, failure is seen as something not to be talked about, something to be shunned away, to be hidden. And in a way, as you're talking there, those dark days of 2008 are coming back to me, and you remember the headlines and you remember the job losses, you remember hearing about the suicides. And you're right, we would be foolish to forget, and we would be foolish to get caught up in something like that in the future. I mean, obviously we can't maybe prevent it, but just if we could learn something from it, which would be to remain aware that there are options, there are always options when it comes to, as you say, that mindset of, you know, do you kind of see it as a failure or a breakdown, or do you see it as somewhat of an opportunity to look at what's really bringing you joy and how to get more of that?
The crazy thing about failure in the United States
is celebrated.
Yeah, it's celebrated. You get going again, you get second chance.
Yeah.
There is a resentment in Ireland. There is a, you know, there's a famous old story of the bucket of crabs on the beach, and the crabs start climbing up. One crab starts climbing up the side of the bucket in order to get out and get onto a better life. And just as he gets to the top of the bucket, one other crab at the bottom reaches up and catches him and pulls him down. And that crab at the bottom that pulled him down was always referred to as the Irish crab. And there is that mentality where you know, forgiveness doesn't come naturally, and second chances aren't often offered to people. And you're right in the context that it should be celebrated, because, you know, without failure, you know, somebody said to me once, you know, you can make one mistake once, but you can't make the same mistake twice. And that's very much the ethos that I had. I can't go back and do what I did before. And the minute I see myself starting to do that, it's like, okay, you got to stop, because we've been here before. And, you know, in business today, lots of business people will be listening to this show. I'm hearing business people now sort of get little jitters, because they're starting to see little things happen again that happened in 2006 and 2007. And the fear factor is still there. You know, this is going to sound crazy, but I believe there are many, many business people today that are in their car driving, listening to this at home, who literally are suffering from post-traumatic stress from what happened in 2008 and right through into hanging on in 2012 and hanging on into 2014 and battling with revenue and entering payments with revenue for schemes to get through. And today in regional towns like Mallow and Youghal and Clonmel and areas like that, the devastation remains. Mm-hmm. So many businesses who open their door on a daily basis, I can tell you behind the scenes, it's week to week. It's a struggle to get a week's wages, to stay up to date with revenue, little boutiques, little restaurants, things like that. And so the devastation remains for many, unless you're in the centre of Dublin city, where it's a different economy. And that's the thing that riles me more than anything. And that's the split economy drives me absolutely bonkers. But post-traumatic stress is really, really out there. People will never be the same as people, as parents, as fathers, as mothers, as a result of what happened.
And I think even the children, we do a leadership program for teenagers called Thriving Teens. And, you know, we ask them sometimes about what their fears are. And kind of something that struck me over the last couple of summers was a lot of them are saying that they fear going bankrupt or losing their business. And that's obviously coming from somewhere. It's coming from maybe their parents or people that they know in their community that has happened to. So final question, George, how are you different now? Like, how do you run your business differently? I know it's a different business model. It's entirely different business. But what do you stay... you know, what do you stay aware for? What are you watching for in terms of this not happening to you again? How are you different as a business owner?
Well, I would say to you that I'm debt-free in terms of a business owner.
Okay.
That's not by choice. It's because I can't borrow money anymore. But even if I could, and I was offered that situation not so long ago, I'm absolutely resisting that.
Okay.
We very much are hugely focused on our overheads. And the third thing I'd say to you, Monica, is we've had a real drive over the last couple of years to create a business that stands out, that is just that little bit different. There are too many businesses that are repeating the same thing from the same people up the road. You've got to be that little bit quirky, a little bit brazen, a little bit different in order to drive footfall. It's got to stand out. And be it a restaurant or a boutique or, in my situation, from a car perspective, you have to offer either something dynamic on price or you have to offer something dynamic in terms of product or service. In our case, it's a different service and a different product. But I would say to people that are in business today, you must travel, you must experiment, you must research, you must go to different cities and different towns and look at your competition. And I won't delay you, but I'll say this very quickly. I've often said to people, you know, go away for 2 days on your own, leave the kids behind, and go with the sole objective in your business of looking at your competition, the length and breadth of the country. And the idea is you come back with just three new, fresh ideas, and you try and implement them. And if one of those three works, you will have improved your revenue over the course of 12 or 24 months, just that little bit. And I didn't arrive here from just joining the dots. I traveled and I went to different countries to look at different things, and when I put it all together in the mixing pot, I end up here in 2019 with an exclusive service. Didn't happen by chance. It's 10 years of researching. You don't know you're doing it at the time, mm-hmm. but when you look back, you can see how you arrived at this point. So my message to people is get out there and tweak your business, make it stand out just that little bit different, find something.
Yeah, you need to be innovative, and I suppose the word I would think it would be curious. You need to be always curious about the world, even if you are making millions every year, that you're still curious about how you can make things better. I think sometimes when people get complacent, that's when it kind of sets in, where they're doing well and that's it. They stop looking around to see how they can make things better.
It starts and you don't see it coming in and then react too late. I absolutely believe that if you own a restaurant right now, you should be at least 3 times a month eating in restaurants in different countries or in different cities or different towns, and coming back and writing down ideas and just implementing those changes. Those little changes will add up over a 2 or 3 year period.
Yeah. Well, look, George, we've gone way over time, but I kind of knew we would, because it's been fascinating to talk to you. And I think this is a topic that we will definitely be revisiting. And thank you so much for being our guest on the show today on Mind Your Own Business. And we'll put your details up on our Facebook page. And if anyone would like to check out the pay as you go auto, we'd highly
auto.ie.
Perfect. Okay, George, we'll stay in touch. Thank you so much again, and have a lovely evening.
Thanks, Monica.
Thank
bye-bye
you.
Now.
Bye-bye now. Okay, so that was George Mordaunt there from the Clonmel Motor Group, Mordaunt Motors Group. Fascinating story about failure and recovery, and how he has built his business back up again through hard work, determination, innovation, I suppose, creativity, and a bit of research thrown in as well for good measure.